Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. Okay, so today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we have Susanna M. Harlow, the Tea Witch, and she's just come out with A Tea Witch's Grimoire, which is a fantastic book of magical tea recipes and a lot of other things too. So, Susanna, how are you today?
I am doing very good. I'm excited. I'm happy to meet you too. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to meet you as well. So we do have a traditional first question on the podcast, and it is, how did you come to the plant path?
Oh my goodness. Okay. let me try to go about this where it's not a whole long hour, but
right.
Basically, I would say that my whole love for plants and its healing properties, because that's where it began first. It was the healing aspects of plants. Probably happened when I was a child, being cared for by my grandmother, my abuelita. You know, she was very much a natural healer with the family, and she wholeheartedly believed in the medicinal properties of different types of teas and broths and vinegars, and basically incorporating that and helping to heal the family around her. So I got to learn a lot of her, of that knowledge from her based off what I was seeing, and how she basically had incorporated both the medicinal aspects of it and the spiritual aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself was just so beautiful to me, even as a child, to witness. And I would say that the growth of that path really happened when I was 17 years old, and I had the chance to work at a metaphysical store. And I worked a lot in the back room where all the herbs were, the whole apothecary. And I was there to basically work on all of the incense blends, the herbal powders, even the candle making, because some of the plants would go there. And I was able to really learn a lot about the folk magic behind these types of plants, these herbs and such. And that was where I really felt my calling for. Like I was able to really intuitively connect with plants and just sense what their greater magical purpose was for. And I took that knowledge and took it with me to when I had worked with an acupuncturist, a traditional Chinese acupuncturist. She had also had a tea room alongside this acupuncture. And the tea room, I guess, was where I would say the tea love had combined with my love for herbal folk magic. I was able to meet and work with a tea master there. He was a multi-generational tea master in his family. And he got to teach me a lot about the wisdom of tea and where it came from and its history and how it's brewed and how it is nurtured and loved. So from there, I was able to really dive in learning about it and in blending together the tea herbal medicinal properties along with my witchy craft and magical folklore of herbs. So I would say that's where it just put me on my path.
So you were steeped, pun intended, from a young age in plant medicine from your abuelita. And then at 17, like, that's a pretty young age to be put into like this folk magic world of working in a metaphysical shop. That's so cool to have that experience.
I, was so blessed to have that. It was, I was really seeking it. I was seeking a mentor. I was seeking a home, I guess you can say, amongst the craft, you know? And right. Yeah, I was really fortunate to be able to find one.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit more about your mentor and the kinds of practices that you became aware of with that experience? And what are the kinds of rituals that would be the tea rituals and the background in this regard?
Well, when it comes to the tea rituals, I actually really learned that the most amongst the tea master at the acupuncturist clinic. They're called Cha from Los Angeles. And, you know, he taught me a lot of the Chinese tea rituals, you know, and how it's really ceremonial when it comes to the certain tools that they have there and how to serve people is very respectful. And it's also kind of a slow process because you're almost kind of, you're trying to bring in the moment and bring everybody into that moment to just take a moment and slow down.
Hmm.
To be mindful, to just, I guess it's the best way I guess to put it, very Buddhist in a way where you live in the present. And that was one of the first things I had realized when it comes to tea rituals, or even just sitting here with your cup of tea, you're very present to be in the moment and just enjoy it peacefully, quietly, mindfully, however you like to, you know. And from there, I learned a lot of the other rituals, like from Japan, like the green tea ceremonies are also very much the same, very respectful, very much in the moment. And when it came down to me developing my tea rituals, in a way, I had combined both being mindful and respectful with the witchcraft aspects of it, you know,
right.
Where you are connecting with the whole space, all of the elements in one, all of the essences and energies together. It's all very much the same way when you're doing a spell and a ritual. It's being in the moment, just being in connection with it all. And I guess being able to link all of these different types of correspondences, you know, the elements, the energies.
That's the beauty of tea, I think, even in like this modern culture where we might not have like the traditional Japanese green tea ceremony, for example, like we still have to boil the water and that takes a moment, you know, we still have to pour the water over the herbs and then let it sit and steep before we drink it. And I feel like that slowing down and that quieting the mind, even without some of the like intentional rituals that you discuss in your book, even like it's still a ritual making a cup of tea in the modern world using like a little tea bag that you get at the grocery store. Like we still have to like pay attention and slow down our minds a little bit to do that act. And so even without the intention, it's working, it's magic.
I've always kind of referred to it as what others would probably call it as mundane magic, you know, your everyday magic. You just carry on in your everyday life. But if you go into it with mindful intentions, well, there it is. There's magic right there that you are summoning.
Yeah, I think some of those, the mundane actions that you do every day are some of the most potent rituals. Because you're doing them every day naturally. And if you can imbue those with intention, then they can become even more powerful. But yeah, I mean, tea is wonderful. Drinking our teas.
Yeah, this
is
cheers.
My favorite cup. It's a catfish cup.
Our tea
with me.
Cute.
But nice. It's a great way to consume herbs in the first place. It's one of the best ways, really, better than tinctures or other infusions of herbs. Just the direct water infusion is
old school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did want to touch on the subject of rituals, the ritual working tools of the tea witch in here. I thought that was very nice. You know, you have like the tea pot is the cauldron. It's the water element tool, and the spoon is the wand, you know, the fire element tool, or the air element tool, the scissors Do you have the scissors? Some traditions use the knife for air, and some use it for fire. And you know, so which one did you use?
I think I had used it.
The knife for fire, and then the spoon for air. Yeah.
So the scissors, or the knife. Yeah, I like that.
So growing up, blades, scissors, swords—they have always, to me, connected in a very fiery kind of way for me.
Huh.
So, yeah, it's like I've always used that tool as a fire element, and funny enough, I had always great results to it. So that's experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's a long-running debate in Western magic about like if you're using the wand for the fire or air and so on. Mm-hmm. But I think it really just depends on what works best for you and what tradition you're working in, because that's the language you're using to communicate with the divine and with the elements.
Exactly. I feel that magic and the craft has always been very intuitively based, you know. In a way, you go with the flow that best feels for you.
Totally. So one of the other tools of the trade for the tea witch is the tea tray, which I really like the idea of, like, containing the space. And so I'm wondering, like, what if somebody wants to set up like a tea altar and have the tools of the trade, like what would they need to begin that practice of like having a tea altar in their home?
I actually, the whole tray was really inspired to me when I was working at the tea room, because that was a part of the big Chinese tea ritual where they had a tray. And when I was looking at that, it completely reminded me of an altar space. I was like, this is an altar space containing all your tools,
mm-hmm.
exactly what you would need, all of your the tools, the things that you would need for your spell intentions. So when you know, this is always preference too. If you can't have a space for a tray for all the tools, you can always take your coffee maker and use that little corner right there and create that as your altar space.
Totally.
So I tend to, it's not there today because we just moved not so long ago, but I have often used one of those really nice kind of tea trays that you can find in most markets. And that's where I used to make that as my altar space, basically, with my teapot warmer, the teapot there, the main one that I knew I would love to dedicate most to the spirits, to my ancestors. And the just like in any other kind of practice, you have your special tools that you have dedicated for your magic, for your craft. And those would be the ones that I would have contained within the tea tray itself. So those were basically the things that I would know I would specifically use if I was to actually do a more of a grander focused tea ritual, such as the ones that you would find in the book.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I love some of the, like, you just have broken down in the book so many different purposes for tea. You have like a prophetic sleep tea and like a tarot tea and different moon teas. So how did you come up with these recipes? Like, were they trial and error? Were they based on some tradition from your grandmother? Or like, how did you get to these recipes?
Well, a lot of them, yes, were trial and error over the years. Honestly, everything that you find in this book has been a part of me for many years, probably since I was maybe about 20, 21 or so. And it, you know, over time, I started creating them when I started blending the teas for their different types of purposes, you know, which came about with, okay, I know that these herbs, this plant, they have this types of energy to it. They correspond with these type of intentions. How can I balance these in a way, just like any other kind of magical powders or incense, that I can use as a tea itself? And so I went about with that and created all these types of blends that I had tested and went in with it. And I've also always been a lover of creating ritual. I guess you can say I really love high ceremonial rituals and ceremonies. So I started putting together, from all my knowledge and experience, these actual spells and rituals together that started off very simple, I blend together a tea and I will drink it, to needing more of a connection, more of a moment and experience, very much like you would find in those Chinese tea rituals, Japanese tea rituals, because like I've learned from the tea master, slowing down, being present, and mindfully putting together your spell in front of you, just it amplifies it. It empowers the moment all around you. So yes, trial and error, although my courage tea, which I have often said that has always been my favorite, is because that one has been with me since I was young.
Awesome. So what is in that one?
The courage tea. It has chamomile, yarrow, and thyme.
And thyme.
Oh, nice.
So what's your process if you're going to make this tea and you're going to have a courage ritual? What are you going to do?
Well, I have always made it very simple, because it's just like what we were previously talking before, when it comes to mundane magic, or comes to like when you really need to just take a moment with yourself and you do something every day, but it's just trying to keep it as natural as you like to be, so that you have more of your mind and your attention behind it, not too distracted by everything else, but just what you desperately need in that moment, which in this case would be courage. I tend to always go to my trusty cast iron kettle that has always to me been a symbol of strength, and
yeah,
like my rock, I guess you can best say. And boil my water in there. And when I hear that water boiling, it's to me like that's the energy that needs to boil within me too. That energy is going to go into me. So I'm solid, I'm grounded. I have that boiling strength of energy in me. And with that in mind, with that knowledge, that knowing, I use that energy to go into blending the tea together. Because usually when it comes to courage tea, I do have some pre-blended already. But there's something about putting the tea together in that moment. It's just, I'm sure probably others can understand when you're actually putting it together in front of you, putting a spell together in front of you, you have direction where your energy is going, And that is where it's going into when I'm placing together the chamomile, the black tea, the yarrow, the thyme, and knowing that each of these herbs, I'm talking to them, they are my friends. I'm asking them to give me this courage that I need. And I always go to my trusty, where's my trusty? Can't see it, but my trusty black cup back there. It's kind of a shape of a cauldron. And I draw a bit of a sigil on it. The sigil helps me clearly see this courage that's in front of me. And I light a simple orange candle and go into it, pour the water out over the tea, see that steam rise and breathe it in, breathing in all that energy, all that whole moment, and just lightly chant to myself that this spell will be complete, that this is what is needed. And the most important moment of it all is when you drink it in and you feel that tea just going through you, that warmth. That to me is like, it is done. The spell is done. It is a part of me. And yeah, that's how I go into it.
Yes. Beautiful. Yeah, so every step of making the tea and even like the breathing in the steam and, you know, everything is part of the ritual. It's part of the intention. And one other thing that you mentioned in the book is how you dispose of the herbs when they're done. Can you talk about that?
Yes, it's very much similar to when, you know, any kind of other spell remnants that you would have when it comes to like either candle wax or herbal pouches or things like that, that basically they have done their job, they have done their work, you know, and it's now time to put them at rest. I have, in a way, developed the same kind of appreciation and respect when it comes to my tea blends as well, that they've done the same thing for me, and I basically want to put them where they belong, respectfully, basically.
Yeah.
Because it's not just over sometimes. Like the tea blends, the tea rituals that especially have been powerful and impactful in my life, in a way, I need to dispose of them rightfully, depending on what they were made for. What was it blended for, basically? You know, to just depending on what the intention was for, you know. And so it's just like with any other kind of spell remnants, if it was intended to just encourage you, for example, like for the courage tea, for example, to help encourage your mental ones, then I would still probably want to keep that tea blend near, if anything, such as like added into a teapot that was nearby my home, my doorstep, just so that energy can still remain around the spot, the area. Or if I had used a tea blend to, let's say, for example, help a dear friend of mine who was like in pain and I wanted to heal them, or I guess you can say fix the situation for them, then that tea blend is still special and it's probably still doing its job. So I would want it dried and maybe placed into like a little tea pillow, a little sachet, so that I can still give it to my friend, for example, that even though after she already had drunk it and took in the spell, she could still take it with her and still sleep upon it, you know, so that it can continue working its magic gently until its very end. You know, things like that.
And what about like a banishing tea? Like if you're making a tea to like cleanse, like how would you deal with those tea herbs different than the ones you're trying to hold close?
Those will definitely be put far away from the home, far okay. away from that person. Basically, mm-hmm. if it has done its job, then yeah. it's time to go and bury that or throw it across a crossroad or burn it in the back door and or swept away so that it is all completely done.
Doesn't work the same to like banish it by putting it in the trash can so much as taking that extra moment to like bring it out into a crossroads, you know?
Put it in, yeah.
That could also happen very much too, you know? Honestly, like I said, it's all about intuitively knowing what to do with it. Like if it's as needed and as simple as just throwing away in the trash and never, you know, seeing it being taken away and bye-bye, well then yes. And then that works as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, cool. You mentioned sigils with the courage tea. And I think for folks who practice sigil magic, it might be something that they haven't really worked with before when they're, you know, making tea and incorporating sigils into that. So I'm wondering how you do that, whether you're writing them. Or...
Yeah, so, you know, you can easily look up how to make your own personal sigils. There's so many wonderful books on that, as well as just on a daily website to learn how to create your own sigils. A lot of my sigils are also very intuitively. It's what feels close to me, depending on the situation and the intention. And I tend to, like I said, I use my trusty mug back there, which is black. And I have like a white dry erase. The dry eraser, one of those kind of chalk markers that I like to use to basically draw on the black mug itself so that I can actually see the sigil. if not that, you can also easily draw, or like, you know, draw out your sigil like on a tea bag, like on the little piece of paper that usually hangs out of your cup. You could draw it upon there as well. I have also even I laugh because it is quite a lot of work sometimes, but I have even sewn the sigil into an actual tea bag before to let it steep in a teacup. But
wow, that's pretty cool.
The extra mile.
Yeah,
that's good magic right there.
Oh, one thing I like to do, I do this daily too, is I trace a design, you know, like a pentagram or a Thor's hammer. It could be any symbol or sigil above my cup, you know, and imagine it very clearly, and then imagine white light coming in and infusing the beverage with the divine power or astral light. And I find that that's very helpful for me. But that's another way to do it. But I like sewing it into the tea bag. That's definitely going the extra mile.
Yeah. And
yes, what I've only done it a handful of times.
Nice. I was kind of interested to see just like the different shapes too, and the significations of like a circle or a compass or 8-pointed star that you have in the book. And I was wondering if you wanted to talk about some of those shapes that you can use as sigils if people aren't going to get into like creating a whole sigil themselves, like maybe just tracing out a moon on their teacup, or a sun or a tree. Like, do you want to share what some of those significations mean to you, those shapes?
Sometimes it doesn't have to be a big old fancy sigil, you know? And that's what I have learned over the years, that sometimes it could just be as simple as a star. That star has so many different meanings to a lot of people, from hope to power to faith to luck, you know? And that's why I kind of went about it being as simple in the book that you can find. You sometimes just need that simple sigil to just help bring about what it is that you want and you need. You know, and if the same goes for circles. Circles mean wholeness, you know, like completion, balance in my mind. Mm-hmm. And like I said, just that simple symbol can just bring about all sorts of different meanings to you, all sorts of different intentions to you. So in a way, that's why I wanted to just keep it as simple as that. So that you're more in touch with what you are seeking, rather than worried so much about what sigil to create, for example. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, in your opinion, do you think that sigils and these shapes are kind of a tool for drawing our own intention and our own thought process to what we're going for? Do you think that they are like drawing from like outside sources, like these shapes are drawing from long-standing magic, like out in the universe? Like, kind of a big question, but
you mean, do you think that it's being downloaded to us?
Is it something external from us, or is the shape like helping our own intention, our own magic, or is the star associated with outside magic from us that, you know, is helping us on our path?
I think it probably could be a little bit of all of that, really, you know. I mean, because sometimes you go about it with, you know, it's a personal need, you know, it is your own intentions. And then sometimes it could also just be your guides that are guiding you towards this tea that you need to make. Then you don't even know why until it's there. And you probably do see like a star come to mind, you know, and it could be from an outside source. I think, yes, definitely.
I think they're very connected too. I mean, so for instance, like if I'm drawing a Thor's hammer on my cup, you know, and I have a relationship with Thor, then I'm calling on his divine energy to do that. And I have a personal relationship with that. So it's both an external thing and an internal thing, where if you're working in a tradition of witchcraft or of ceremonial magic, where the pentagram means a specific thing, then when you draw that pentagram, it means something specific to you, but also to like the larger egregore of the tradition that you are part of too.
Yes, a little bit of both.
Yes, and who you are summoning, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're connecting with, whether it be divine beings, angels, guides, ancestors.
Yeah, or planets. Planetary sigils could also be a good thing. Putting the Jupiter symbol on top if you want more wisdom and balance, or a Mars if you want more energy and courage, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yes. And speaking of planets and astrology, you have moon teas and eclipse teas and planetary teas, and then
zodiac signs.
Yeah, and the zodiac signs. Do you want to maybe go into one of the zodiac sign teas and tell us about, you know, the herbs involved or how you came up with those, each of the sign teas?
Yeah, actually it has started back when I was working in another tea store. And it kind of started off as a really nice kind of a fun, like, oh, what's your horoscope? Kind of like how we began our conversation earlier. What's your horoscope? Oh, you're a Cancer? Uh-huh. Okay, you know what? Let me look around, you know, and we had a whole array of different types of teas behind us, different types of herbs to blend together. And how I came about it was basically looking deep into the different zodiacs and their correspondences to them. Like how, let's say, Cancer to me has always been, well, it is a water sign, you know. So water signs, looking into different types of herbs that correspond to the element of water. For example, the more gentler aspects of certain herbs as far as their energies and their folk magic. Those will be wonderful teas to use for Cancer if they're looking for healing, for love, for empathy, psychic abilities, things. You'll notice that herbs will have the same kind of correspondences to Cancers, if that makes sense. You know, so for example, again, also with Aries. I'm going to say Aries because my brother's Aries. He, you know, has always been a very strengthening influence to me, very independent and courageous. And when I went into creating this tea blend for an Aries, I said, okay, I knew I needed to have some herbs that are connected to the fire element, that are connected to these types of aspects, these strengthening, courageous, independent aspects. And that's why black tea especially called to me, because it has that fiery energy to it, as well as perfect for spells of courage, you know. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for cardamom and for ginger and cinnamon. And I was just like, hey, that sounds like a delicious chai tea blend right there.
Yeah.
And that's in a way how I went about it. So that, you know, if an Aries wanted to remember that independence that they have in them, then they can drink that tea to basically encourage more of that energy, or even to kind of help soothe them in the same time, basically to bring about a balance. So that's what these zodiac teas are really about, basically to help encourage the energy that is within every person, but as well as to help balance and soothe those kind of, I don't want to call them flaws. They're not flaws. Those beautiful imperfections.
Yeah.
And the same can be said for someone else who isn't an Aries, you know, like me. I'm an Aries, but I need more aspects of an Aries, you know.
Right. You're calling in the Aries energy.
Yes. Yes. So I will make that tea for me to kind of help encourage those aspects.
Yeah, if you want to get some stuff done, get some stuff started.
Yeah,
you know, get going. You know, make your Aries tea, and like your the Libra, if you want to be a little more balanced and clear, you know, weighing things, making good judgments. That makes sense. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I like how you also, there's just so much intention to every step of it. So when you're making, say, the Aries tea, can you also describe like the setting the stage, like how you're setting the table with a red cloth, for example. And like, you also incorporate crystals and tarot into this.
Yes, I very much love tea and tarot. You know,
it's a
fun thing to do with friends or just on your own, you know. Mm-hmm. And you notice that a lot of the major arcanas in the tarot deck correspond to each of the different types of zodiac horoscope signs. So that's in a way why I wanted to make it a vocal point when it came down to setting up the space and the spell or the ritual. You know, I wanted to incorporate those, like for in this case, the Aries tea, I wanted to incorporate that emperor, because the emperor, he really does, you know, perfectly represent Aries in a way. You know, so he brings about that strength and independence and courage and passion, you know. And using that as a part of the spell, I think, is a wonderful visual point as well. So, and of course, you know, to complete a whole ritual, you do need your fire elements, you know, your candles. You do need your earth aspects as far as like the crystals go, you know, for like a bloodstone, red jasper, hemlock to go with Aries. I have recently become a big fan of crystals, which is funny how it just recently happened, but I have found that bringing together crystals and tea have in a way truly heightened the magical aspects experience of it all. So it's a really good tower combo.
And how are you utilizing the crystals with the tea exactly? Are you like brewing crystals and tea?
No, you know, because there are some crystals that you probably should not let touch water.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, crystals, they have a wonderful frequency to them that just having them nearby, they are already just emanating this aura, this energy around the space itself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I tend to like to just kind of have them together, have like a crystal close to your tea mug or near your teapot. Or in other ways, if I know if it's a safe crystal, for example, I'd like to add it actually on top of, a little too deep, you can't see this. But like, you will have like a crystal inside, maybe perhaps just resting gently on top of your tea blend to help basically infuse it with that, the energy, the correspondences to them. I have recently started researching and experimenting for my next book.
Ooh.
Yes. Crystal grids. I don't know if you've heard of it, but basically incorporating crystal grids within the actual tea ceremony itself.
Cool.
I've heard of crystal grids, but I don't really know what they do or what they are. It's okay.
Yellow sided.
Yeah, I love that.
So basically, crystal grids are like sacred geometric shapes.
Okay.
Such as Metatron's symbol, or even like the triple spiral, or even the flower of life. These types of shapes, designs. A lot of people have used these designs to basically lay out their crystals, depending on the crystals that you're using, depending on the outcome that you are desiring, that you want to manifest, make real. You are setting out these shapes, this crystal grid, to basically amplify the energy and to send it out into the universe, into the space around you, to make real. That makes sense.
Okay, yeah, totally.
And I have found in my recent research and tests that it is powerful, especially when you do have it surrounding your teapot, your tea ritual itself, you know?
Mm.
So this book only gives a glimpse of me starting, like, in the book, you probably would see how I have some of the crystals in it. And it's very simple. The crystals are beside your teacups, your candles, things like that. But yes, in the next one, you probably will see a very much more elaborate rituals incorporating the two.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I'm imagining like your tea trays and the sacred space that you're creating are getting more elaborate with with your crystals. That's so cool.
Yeah, as you experiment and find out more. That's cool. I'm wondering also if you have any like stories of some very successful or important tea magic that you've been a part of.
I could think of a good number, actually. Mm-hmm. I could think of the one that's probably the most significant. I'm thinking of one where it was a spiritual communion type of thing, you know, where you are connecting with your ancestors. And it was in a kind of a tea circle type of situation with friends where we were trying to reach out to our ancestors, to our loved ones that passed. Mm-hmm. And we had set it up, I guess you would say, almost kind of like a seance type of thing, where we were drinking together a spirit tea blend, as well as it was kind of a mixed blend of a spirit tea with a kind of a psychic ability type of tea blend mixed together. So it would help expand our minds, our hearts, to any messages that were coming through. And we were off tea itself to our loved ones, you know, actually placing out cups, serves, kind of like, you know, when you place out a plate of food for loved ones. It was in that way off tea. And it was a wonderful moment, honestly, because we had mediums that were there that were starting to, they were able to feel our loved ones coming forward. A couple of them were a lot more louder and significant and sending out messages to show that who they were to this person in the circle. So it was just, that I would say was probably one of the most successful tea rituals that was really amazing and impacting, just to be able to experience the spirits coming forward within that simple yet tea ritual itself, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So cool.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. So I also want to ask you about blooming tea. I haven't heard of that before. And so it's kind of a change of subject from that story. But what is a blooming tea and how do you make it?
Blooming tea is, I almost want to go grab one. it's basically, a lot of the time it is made out of the actual tea plant itself, the Carmelis sinensis plant. And it is often, more than likely, hand rolled. It's the dry tea leaves that are basically bundled. And then you have different types of flower blossoms, just depending. There's some chamomile, there's chrysanthemum, roses. And basically these are gently bundled within that tea bundle itself. And then you will wrap, they're wrapped up nice and tight. And by the time that you place it into like a glass teapot, for example, and you pour the hot water over it, you will literally see it blossom. So it will open up like just like this, the blossom, like they can't see me, but basically it opens up and the blossom itself comes lifting up. It's a very beautiful sight, you know. Oh, and when I first witnessed it, my brain instantly went to, that is a spell come to life right there. You're literally watching your spell unfurl and just rise, you know. So that's why I had to incorporate it into the book, incorporate it into my craft, because it's literally a visual representation of your intentions coming to life.
That's really cool. I definitely want to try that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't. I'm sure they probably in some tea shops they have that there. Or you can make it yourself.
Yeah. Now that I have the
my
book.
Book.
So now that we're into the spooky season, it's October.
You have a Samhain tea.
You have a Samhain tea, and I was wondering if you would spill the tea a little bit and share what the recipe is for our listeners of, and maybe what the ritual would look like for folks who might want to try, you know, creating a Samhain tea and doing the ritual this year.
Okay, yeah. Samhain tea is a blend of red rooibos tea, which is really nice, delicate, very slight sweet tea, with dried
it.
Cranberries, pumpkin seeds, cinnamon, and whole cloves. So it's very much into a spooky Samhain themed tea to it. But if you want to create this tea ritual, it's definitely wonderful use in the time to honor our ancestors and to pay our respects to our family members, our elders, our loved ones. It's definitely leaning towards the honoring aspects of those past, you know, because what is Samhain but our loved ones coming back to visit us, you know, for some cultures. But the veil is thin, so this ritual is basically meant to invite them, have a moment with them, and then say your goodbyes with them, but in honor and respect and in love. So you could set up a simple space either in your kitchen or in your altar, depending on where you feel most connected to. You can lay out a nice large black cloth and a glass bowl and surround the bowl with four white candles. Burn incense such as mugwort and sandalwood, which is very inviting for spirits, and blend together this tea within that bowl. And then you will visualize, as you're blending this tea, the long roots of your lineage, your loved ones that you feel that will more than likely come to visit you or invite your guides and your ancestors from long past. And infuse the tea within your pot. And you can, as it's infusing, you can set about some smoky quartz, some obsidian stones to help amplify this welcoming blend. And focus your intentions. If you don't want to, you know, if you're a little scary and don't want to invite spirits or things into your home, and you just want to enjoy this tea to honor the Sabbat itself, you can use this ritual and this tea blend more to focus your intent on things such as rebirth and transformation, to help fill yourself with wisdom and to recognize the experiences you have gained throughout the year, and taking that time to bless the Sabbath, bless yourself, and just drink it in. In my tea book, there is a chant if you want to chant it in, you know, and set those intentions, you may, but otherwise you can just sit there quietly and be mindful to yourself of the type of intentions you're wanting. And I love using cinnamon sticks as type of tools, as like a wand, for example. And I often use it in my teacups, in my tea brews, and use it to basically continue that energy, that intention, and stir it clockwise to invite these types of wisdom and rebirth and transformation into my life. So yes, just sit back, relax, and just enjoy the tea to yourself. And yes.
Awesome. And did you wrote all of the like rituals for this, right? Like, yeah, I love them. They're so beautiful.
Oh, the chants.
Or the chants, sorry. Like, the chants themselves are like amazing poetry, especially like at the end you have the T, which is rune, and a T, which is creed. Those are beautiful. I was wondering if you wanted to read one of them to us as like a closing before the end of the show, just to have a sample of your beautiful writing.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm a bit of a poet.
You are a poet, absolutely.
People have often said I'm such a romantic poet over the years. I'll use that in my craft. One here. Let me go ahead and say the tea, which is rune. Yes. This actually has always been with me for the last 10 years, actually. The tea, which is rune. Larksome delight and radiant gloom. Leaf to root and trunk to limb. Darken to the enchantress gloom. Here come thee to the hum. Ruler of runes, empress of ash, with master of the dirt and the grass, bestow thy desire, lightning flash, moil thy power onto this last. Within the force of wind and sand, within the spirit of star and seed, as the spell is done, dance to the land.
Beautiful. Also, all of the illustrations in this book are absolutely beautiful too. The art is just speaking to my soul, of all the plants and the images of the people. I'll just show one here if you can see this beautiful person with their teacup. So I am so grateful to have this book in our library, and we'll definitely draw from it whenever I'm, you know, needing some inspiration for my own ritual teas. So thank you so much for writing it and sharing your wisdom with us. And thank you for being on the show today and all of your stories.
Yeah. How can people get in touch with you, and how can they get your book and follow your work?
People can find me on most of the social medias. I'm under the Tea Witch blog. And I have a blog as well. It's the teawitchblog.com. And you can definitely find my book in Amazon and more than likely probably in most stores, such as perhaps Barnes & Noble, Books a Million, Second and Charles, I believe. And yes, if you want a quick pickup, probably Amazon will be the fastest if you don't want to step out of your home. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, by the way, for having me on here. I super appreciate it. Beyond grateful.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It was lovely meeting you, and it was a fantastic chat. So thank you.